was kind of like when we did that Lighthouse show where it's like the bar was open before and after, but because they were like walking through, they didn't really want you going up during the show.
Oh, that bar wasn't open?
Remember how like during the show they were like, you can't go up to the bar because they're actually using it for the show?
I guess I forgot because they kept giving us shots. At no point was I like, I need some alcohol. Because also remember my gin and tonic was like 80%
yeah.
gin. It was a very Irish cocktail. They were like, there you go. That's enough for the rest of the weekend. Anyways, so this is the one that was not before World War II. It's before World War I.
Yeah, I was thinking, I don't think any shows are set modern day this year.
Okay, so Once Upon a One More Time has no time.
Okay.
Heart of Rock and Roll, is that like the 80s?
Yeah, I think that's meant to be 80s.
Oh, Ohio?
Oh, that's true. Yeah. When's The Notebook set?
The Notebook is one war or the other because he also goes to the military. Okay, let me look. Yes, he goes to World War II.
Oh, so also basically the same time period as everything else.
Though not a word was spoken, our volume only grew. As winter turned to spring, we never left the avenue. The young are at the gates, the young are at the gates. Silent and delirious, the young are at the gates.
Welcome everyone to Bottomless Broadway, where we talk musicals over mimosas. Today we are going to talk about one of the shows that happened around the World Wars. It is Suffs. What are your five words?
It's just gonna be, did not know this history. Because, I mean, I remember we learned about the suffragist movement and everything in history class, but Alice Paul was not a name that I ever recalled before seeing Suffs. Like, you know, Ida B. Wells, I remembered, Susan B. Anthony, who was earlier, I remembered, but Alice Paul, I was like, I don't know who this bitch is. They mentioned her in POTUS in a throwaway line, which was actually really funny because I saw that after the first iteration of Suffs. And I was like, oh my God, I know that person now. It seems kind of surprising because this is all leading up to how they basically got the 19th Amendment passed, which allowed women to vote, which is a pretty big deal because that obviously affects both of our lives now.
Yeah, I guess I was going to go down like the exact same route with my five words because mine were, I'm a victim of bad education, question mark, because we went to really good schools. And I just would have thought that if anyone knew had known, we would have known. But, you know, both today and after we saw the show, we like saw sentiment around how people are kind of like, oh, my God, why did this story have to be on Broadway? Like, this is basic knowledge. Who needs this? Like that kind of chatter, which is really shocking to me because it's like, yeah, I know there was a march. I know the 19th Amendment, but I did not know Alice Paul or Carrie Catt or this full story at all. This Alice Paul story, because we never learned in school, I never really had any chance afterwards to learn it.
Yeah.
So I'm very glad that we get to now. And I don't know who is out there thinking that this isn't important, but you're wrong.
I think it also just does a really good job sort of showing how they got up to the 19th Amendment. And we'll get into it once we get into the plot summary more and stuff. But just like, I mean, inevitably the show is going to be compared to Hamilton, both probably by us and by critics. But I think it does sort of do a similar thing, perhaps not as interestingly as Hamilton does it, but it shows you like these were just, you know, kind of regular people who really believed in something. This is like the drive that they had to do. And it does give you a better way of like relating to the characters because even though Alice Paul is kind of the main character, she's also surrounded by three friends that are really helping her in this. And they do get a chance to just seem like regular people who just, you know, are kind of brought together because they really believe in something strongly.
You know how in Hamilton, they kind of end with explaining why we didn't know his story up until now and how like he was kind of like buried by his political opponents. I wish they went into that for this show, actually. They didn't. I assume it's just because she's a woman.
I wonder if there's just like wasn't anything there.
You know, like at the end of the show, and I don't think this is like a huge spoiler or anything, the climax of the show is really the 19th Amendment, and she labors for the rest of her life for women's rights, and I think it doesn't really go anywhere. Like, obviously, she contributes to efforts that eventually do good, but it just seems like she labors all her life after the 19th Amendment gets passed and things are really slow and all her friends have kind of left to do their own thing, which is totally fine. But it just kind of seems like she just faded into the background and died.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I mean, which I kind of also got the sense that she wasn't really like, she was like, there's more work to be done. I'm not going to pat myself on the back. I'm not going to like really brag about this. I assume the main reason we even know about all the things that happened was because of the book that was written by Doris. And that was also the book that like inspired Shayna Taub to write the show and everything. So definitely that was like a huge part of the show in general. It wasn't like Hamilton where he was obsessed with his legacy. It was about like, let me make sure that what I create can affect other people. And like other people do sort of have parts of a song where they're like, I hope that my daughter will know. I hope my granddaughter will know. But I don't actually think she takes a huge part in that part of the song now that I think
about
it.
Well, she is specifically like, she doesn't care about her personal legacy at all. Like, she doesn't want a family. She's like, I'm just going to stay at this desk and work until the day I die. And she, also very unlike Hamilton, lives until her fucking 90s.
Yeah.
She talked about her mom because her mom was, of her time, a feminist. And she brings that up early in the show. So I feel like maybe she sang a line for wanting her mother to.
Yeah, that sounds
But she doesn't really talk about possible. The future. Mm-hmm. Anyways, let me give a summary and then.
Yep.
Okay. Suffs is about the suffragists, and like we've said, specifically Alice Paul and her crew of generally like more radical younger women campaigning for the female vote during the pretty sexist Woodrow Wilson's presidency, the impending and then ongoing World War One, their relationship with the more conservative National American Women's Suffrage Association, or NASA, their leader, Carrie Catt, as well as their relationship with Ida B. Wells and like Black women facing both gender and racial inequalities during that time. So we start the show by being introduced to actually Carrie Catt and NASA first and getting a glimpse of kind of how the previous generation of women have been angling for the right to vote. And then Alice Paul rushes onto stage with, you know, a much more radical proposal. She gets rejected by Carrie immediately. So she forms her own entourage with her best friend, Lucy, and like a socialist / socialite, Inez, a Polish immigrant, Ruza, and a college intern, Dory. So they organized this very successful march on Washington. Something like 200,000 women attend. It gets them recognized by NASA, but sadly, not really by the president or any men. So they work under NASA for a while, but during that time, they're forced to like be very patient and polite. And this partnership ultimately doesn't work out when Alice Paul decides that she's going to openly campaign against Wilson's re-election due to the fact that he's been ghosting her and her requests for the vote. And then Carrie Catt specifically like is siding with Wilson because World War One is like going on. The U.S. just hasn't joined it yet, but Wilson's kind of promised her that like they're not going to join it. So she like really wants to side with Wilson, which is a big cause for a lot of shit, really. Like, it's why she and Alice have a huge falling out. But then the U.S. does enter World War One, which really hurts Carrie's position at NASA. The other effect this war has is patriotism is a law now. I didn't know that was legal. but apparently when a war is going on, that happens. So protesters can be jailed, which Alice and all of her friends do. It's a really bummer part of the show. But, you know, we know how history goes. Obviously, we get Amendment 19, but a lot of fucked up shit happens for it. Oh, also, Portland has a public school called the Woodrow Wilson High School, and they renamed it to the Ida B. Wells High School because they were like, fuck that guy.
Dang. Good for them.
Yeah.
I did think one of the things that the show did really well was in sort of the different positions that both Alice Paul and Carrie Cat had. You sort of mentioned in your summary, Carrie Cat was very much trying to be like supporting the president, trying to like kind of sweet talk them into creating the 19th Amendment and everything. And Alice Paul was more like, no, we need to be like in their faces. We need to make sure they can't ignore us. We need to have like marches and protests and like stuff like that. And like, So two very different approaches. But the way that this show depicts Wilson actually agreeing to the 19th Amendment, you kind of really needed both, because it's like he was really annoyed by the Alice Paul faction, and then Carrie Cat was like in his ear being like, just do this and it'll go away and we can get the credit and you can pretend that it was like the good people like us that did it and not the like annoying little girls over there. It made it seem like both positions were really kind of necessary for that to happen, which I thought was interesting. But it also has the whole idea of like Carrie Cat used to be the Alice Paul when she was her age. She used to be like the really stubborn and like aggressive, like we need change person. And by the end, Alice Paul sees like another much younger suffragist coming into her office. And they're also like, oh, you're only trying to get this one thing passed. Like, here's a list of like 30 things that I want passed. And like, Alice is like, no, like we got to approach people one thing at a time. And then she also has that same sort of realization. So it's also about like youth and compared to the older group of progressives and like how mindsets and like opinions change over time too, which I think is also a super valid thing that we kind of see today as well.
Yeah, it definitely does that really well where, okay, there's a couple ways to look at the factions in my opinion. So obviously there's like Alice Paul versus Carrie Cat, old and young. And then there's Ida B. Wells versus, who's the other person?
Oh, I know who you're talking about. Mary Church Terrell.
Yes. Mary Church Terrell. She's a black woman, but she's kind of like in Carrie Cat's role, whereas Ida B. Wells is kind of in Alice Paul's role. So there's that parallel, obviously. But then Ida is also kind of juxtaposed against Alice Paul and Carrie Cat as well, in the sense that, you know, it's like Carrie tells Alice to like chill the fuck out and one thing at a time. And Alice actually kind of says the same thing to Ida, because she's like, what about the black people? And Alice is like, you're going to have to wait for this. I feel like it shows these 3 to 4 separate factions kind of really well. And it really shows you how none of them are perfect. And there just probably wasn't a single good answer to tackle this with. I also really did enjoy the score of this show. However, the song list is long and there is no cast recording yet, so I don't know if I'm capable of going song by song.
Yeah. One other thing I did want to mention was that off-Broadway, the show was sung through. I actually wasn't a huge fan of it off-Broadway. I still found the story really interesting, but I didn't think that the musical succeeded as much as I wanted it to in being just like a compelling show. And I think a huge part of that was just when it was sung through, it felt like everything just kind of blurred together. It was all sort of one note almost. I was actually really impressed at how much work they did, and it is no longer sung through, but part of it, you can also still hear some of the what was probably formerly recitative. So I'm not obsessed with the set still, but like I do think it made it more dynamic and just helped certain events pop a little more. As far as the score goes, yeah, I do think there's actually quite a lot of songs. Like if I just look through the score and pick out which songs I like, there's probably at least like 4 or 5 from each act. So I think it definitely did a good job.
Yeah. It's not like the first time I saw Hadestown and I was like, oh my God, the score. But it is a good score. It fits the show. There's some bangers. Mm-hmm. I'm into it. So the opening number is called Let Mother Vote. This is sung by Carrie Cat, who's played by Jen Colella. I think she was really great. It's an interesting way to open the show. And I know you said it was different at the public because this is a new song. But essentially, Carrie Cat is speaking at like the annual NASA convention. And I don't remember the exact number, but it's like the fucking 80th annual convention they've had because they've been fighting for this female vote for fucking ever, right?
Yeah.
So you immediately know that like this has gone on for a very long time. Everyone at this convention is like really poised, dressed very traditionally. And what she sings for Let Mother Vote is basically because like she's playing an older woman, she's like, Mother bathed you and clothed you and taught you the fucking alphabet. So if we could do all of that and raise these like smart young men, we can also vote and we'll vote exactly like our boys because we raised them and we're in the same family as them. So what's the harm? And that's basically her platform. It's like a pretty light number, but I think it was a fun way to start the show.
Yeah, and I thought this was also a pretty catchy song. It's not the song that like necessarily stands out the most, but it definitely does what it needs to do. And it also does a good job of setting the scene of like, here's where we are. We can't really like come out and demand rights outright, but we gotta sort of suck up to the men in power, which right. also really provides a good contrast for when Alice Paul shows up and she had grown up coming to these suffragist rallies with her mom, and she really looked up to Carrie Chapman Catt. But then when she actually met her, she was like, I think we should have a march. And Carrie was like, no, that's too far.
The song comes back many times. I feel like it's quite effective every time that it does come back. Mm-hmm. And it's also relatable. Like, it's kind of still true today. Like, alienating the straight white men doesn't actually help you most of the time, yeah. sadly. You know, so I feel like it's also smart because it's relatable to this day over 100 years later, which is just fucking sad. But I feel like all of us in the audience are like, yes, we understand your point, Jen Colella. Yeah.
So we didn't see Shayna Taub in the performance. We had her alternate, Holly Gold, who was great. So
yes.
No,
I really liked her. In the clips of Shayna from their promotion performances, I'm kind of glad I saw Holly because I'm sure Shayna's very good in her role. You know, it's like Hamilton. It's like she wrote it. She wants to play this.
Yeah.
Fair enough. She's like, the character is probably very close to her heart and she probably does a really good job like connecting and acting for that mm-hmm. role. But I just feel like because Holly was casted, she's just more casted specifically for this role.
Yeah.
And just like her look and her age and everything just seemed to fit the character a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
Just from like the very little parts of Shayna's performances that I did see.
Alice Paul sings an I Want song, Finish the Fight. I don't know that this is actually that great of an I Want song, but it does sort of present who she is. She's just like really driven by this one idea of getting equal rights for women.
Throughout the entire show, I feel like she tries to find motivation in other people, even though like she's clearly very motivated herself. But Finish the Fight, I feel like that term is kind of related to because her mom was also a suffragist.
Mm-hmm.
And she, one of the first things she says when she runs up to Carrie Cat is, my mom took me to like one of these annual conventions when I was like 5 years old. And Carrie's like, that's awesome. I love a second generation suffragist, you know, like good for you. And she's like, no, it's not a good thing because my mom's dead now and she never got to vote and you're taking too fucking long. And that's kind of something that comes up over and over in this mm-hmm. show. But Finish the Fight is, you know, it's like she is going to see to the end of this in her lifetime. She brings it up a lot. She brings up her mom a lot. And then later on in the show, she brings up Inez a lot. And she's kind mm-hmm. of like, I have to do it for these people.
Yeah, that's
which
true.
It's kind of random because it's like, you're motivated, girl. Like, you don't need to bring up dead people. You're very motivated.
Yeah. I think I guess the main thing that Finish the Fight does for me is it also sort of bookends the show because obviously even after the 19th Amendment is passed, she works a long time on the ERA, which is only touched on kind of briefly in the show. But that, spoiler alert for history, never gets passed. And it is just, she truly is working until she like dies. But Shayna Taub also included this quote in the playbill, which she, I guess, was also really inspired by, which is just, it's from the Talmud. It says, you're not obligated to complete the work, but neither are you free to abandon it. So I think that is sort of how she sees Alice Paul, as well as maybe like her own work in telling this story.
Yeah. So she moves herself into an abandoned office and enlists her best friend from college, Lucy Burns. And they start planning for a protest, which NASA has never done before because they're so peaceful and ladylike. So they kind of have this like mutter chant that's like, how can we do this if it's never been done before?
Which sounded very Hamilton to me. I don't know what it was even, but just something about the harmonies.
Yeah. So the songs, I don't think it's super interesting because I venture a guess that like over 50% of it is basically that one line of like, how can we do it if it's never
it
been
really
done before?
It really is just like one of those assembling the team, like, oh, yeah. I have this friend who's going to be interested. They have like a couple lines to introduce themselves. And then they're like, they pull in another friend. They introduce themselves. You sort of just like see who is playing what role in this fight.
It moves the plot forward. So it's okay that it's not the most exciting. So during that song, we get Inez Milholland, who is a hot, promiscuous, liberal, cool girl who is, I think, like, kind of known in a lot of circles, like, has a lot of stage presence, is maybe a socialite. And they're like, she's going to be the face of our campaign. They also bring in Ruza, who I don't really know why she joins, but she is a very intense person.
Well, she's Polish. She's like a power to the people because she's basically like the working class. So I think supposed to bring in people from the working class because all these other girls are kind of like not first or second gen Americans. They're white girls. They're like fairly well off. So Ruza is supposed to be like the immigrants and working class.
That makes sense. That's a really good point. We complete the entourage with Doris Stevens, who is a college intern, basically. She kind of doesn't really start off seeming as an equal because they essentially invite her in to be like a secretary scribe kind of person. Mm-hmm. And they're like, you need to document all of this, which thank God she did. She's like a little shy, a little awkward, doing her best scribing, but she grows into a really cool person.
I kind of wish they sort of portrayed this part a little more, but they obviously get a huge following to participate in the march. And I don't think I quite realized that until a little later. Like, it wasn't really showing how they managed to get all these people involved.
I think part of the problem is because Find a Way doesn't progress because they just keep saying like, how can we do this if it's never been done before? And then all of a sudden they're like, we have 200,000 people attending.
All of a sudden they're just like, we did it.
Yeah, I'm like, wait, I thought you guys were still freaking out.
But yeah, so they got big enough that Ida B. Wells, who is like a known name at this point, she basically is like, well, what about the black people? And it is kind of a tough position where I guess a lot of the Southern rich white ladies had donated a lot of money. They were kind of necessary to hold the march. And they did that on the contingency that the black people had to be marching behind the white woman.
Or not show up at all.
Right. Ida B. Wells is like, well, that's not equality. And so they just say like, oh, well, like, you know, this is just the first step. If you just wait, we'll get to you. And so she sings a whole song called Wait My Turn, where she's basically like, I'm tired of waiting. I shouldn't have to do this anymore. Yeah. And that's like a great song too.
The main refrain is just like, don't tell me to wait my turn, which is really good. I really like it as a solo. She's not really explored enough in this show. Like we've talked about how it would be better if she was as much as a lead as Alice. And it would be like the two of them with Carrie Cat and Mary Church Terrell.
Right.
But I understand it's mainly an Alice Paul show. But I feel like they just kind of shoved her in there. And
yeah, they do introduce Mary Church Terrell around here. And you sort of see like her differences in opinion from Ida B. Wells, because she's perfectly happy just marching at all. I do think this is probably one of the show's biggest flaws, but it's also hard to say how it could have done it better. Because like you said, it is mostly the Alice Paul show. And it's not like they could have focused it so much on Alice Paul that they just ignored the black movement completely, because then that would be pretty bad too.
Right.
So they had to include it in some way, but it just feels like every time it's like, oh, right, and here are the Black people. And they don't really fully get a chance to have that explored at all. They don't really like go into the morals of it outside of just Ida B. Wells pointing it out.
What I've learned is the red states hold the same kind of power. They still do. I don't even know if it was specifically related to donations and money. They were just like, if the Southern women don't come, we won't have the majority of our fucking people. So we have to appease them, because otherwise there won't be 200,000 people. There might not even be half of that. Like, that was the huge issue. Their hands were really tied, right? At least according to this show.
Yeah, definitely.
Mary Church Terrell, she also kind of shows she's very smart, and she kind of like chastises Ida B. Wells. And I think she ends up getting to march not in the back, because she like wrote to her daughter's school or something like that, and they're like, oh, she should be able to march with her classmates or something like that. Mm-hmm. I don't really remember exactly. And she kind of like gives Ida like a I told you so moment,
right?
Because Ida really judges her for also being a part of NASA, and she's like, you know that you're basically just the diversity hire of NASA. And Mary Church Terrell is like, well, you know, I know I'm probably the diversity hire, but if I was not there, there would be no diversity, period, and nobody would talk about it.
Wait my turn. Well, I sure don't see you waiting yours. No, you're preaching, we demand it now, while knocking down locked doors. But you want me to wait my turn, so you don't offend your southern base. Since when does a radical roll over for bigots in the first place? That's not leadership, Alice.
The next important song is The March, and I mean, it's not a massive cast and they don't really form a line for this march or anything, but they're definitely all there.
But they do
together.
Have a horse.
Right. Well, we got half a horse. Yeah. Not even half. We got
the ass,
half a skeleton. What week of previews do we see it in? Do you know?
I think the first.
Oh, okay. So they weren't done with the horse, apparently. It's a whole thing where Inez, you know, she's a socialite hipster. So she's like, I need a white horse for this march, and I'm going to like dress up like a knight in shining armor, which she does, and she kills it. But when we saw it during previews, they did not finish the horse. It was truly like the hips and ass and hind legs of a horse, but only the skeletons. So she was basically sitting on like some horse ribs, and that was it. And in the new picture you sent me, I mean, yes, first of all, there's a head, but also it's like very majestic because the horse is like draped in gold and maybe purple. Yeah. And we didn't even get horse skin.
We were both looking at the horse being like, they're definitely adding a head to it, right? We weren't completely sure, but it looked bad enough where it was like, I hope they're adding a head to it.
Everything looks sinister because you don't want to be riding on a horse skeleton for yeah. the women's suffrage. The new one where like also the horse head is in like gold armor, it just looks so majestic and powerful. And I feel like ours looked sinister because it was half a horse skeleton.
Yeah.
The march, I actually like. I think I might like more than you do.
Oh, I felt this about a few of the songs in the show where they were good for what they were doing, but they also felt a little generic, inspirational. You know what I mean?
It is generic. I'm sure if like we read the lyrics, it would be really basic. But I just thought the performance was really powerful. And they talk about the men and maybe police, I'm not really sure, trying to stop the protest and, you know, the hair pulling and the kicking and whatever. Alice Paul is like, there's more of us than there are of them. Like, let's just march forward. And they look hesitant because this was a big deal because, you know, like women weren't protesting on the streets, it seems, because this is the first one. So they're all really scared. And I feel like they act out like being really excited and being hesitant and kind of scared and then like overcoming it really well. And Rosa is like, I want to poke out the eyes of all of these guys. It was also very relevant because violence during protests are still really right. relevant, and especially have been the last couple of years. So like, that's all stuff that like we've seen either on the news or in person in the last 5 years. So even though like It was generic. It is also like, well, it's generic because it's been happening for 100 years. So yeah. I liked that.
I definitely think it was a good number. I think on stage it played out really well.
Yeah. And then towards the end of that song, when it becomes more clear that this protest was a successful event, they go into the, I want my sisters to know that I was here. I want my mother to know that I was here. And so the one that always makes me a little emotional is the I want my great granddaughter to know I was here. Because it's just, I don't know, it's very legacy based. It's very like, and also we are the great granddaughter generation, actually, because my grandma was born in 1935. And this was 20 years before that. So maybe we're like great great granddaughter. But like we are, millennials are this generation, you know, so it is very like on the nose. It's like, oh my God, these are the people who fought for our rights. We are the great granddaughters. But also Inez, I believe, is the very first person in the entire show who says, I want my great granddaughter to know that I was here. And then we also find out later that she really wants to get pregnant, but she can't. And then she dies. So I feel like that is also pretty emotional.
Oh, because
it's like she did care more about her legacy, maybe, and she wanted to give her future daughters and granddaughters and great-granddaughters rights. And I guess in a way we all are her great-granddaughter, but she doesn't actually have any.
Yeah. That is pretty sad.
Get back!
Get back!
Then that brings us to GAB, which stands for Great American Bitch. This is one of the new songs that I think is one of the like most fun because it's just like a chance to really hang out with the characters in a sense. But Doris is kind of appalled because someone called her a bitch in the protest, and all the other girls are just sort of like welcoming her into the fold. Like, oh my God, you made it. You finally got called a bitch. And it's kind of like a really fun character number, but it's also like a female empowerment number where they're just like, yeah, when people feel threatened, they're gonna call you a bitch and you just gotta embrace that.
I love this song because A, it has branding, B, it's comedic, and C, it actually tells us a lot more about Alice Paul's entourage than I had known previously. You kind of, you know, make assumptions based off of the characters that they're acting out and everything. But this song really makes it clear because I think Inez starts the song. She's like, I'm a great American bitch because like I fuck whoever I want. I seduce whoever I want. And men think I'm a slut, but they're just jealous. And I'm a great American bitch. And Rusa is working class. So her whole story is, you know, about being like harassed by her boss and she kicked him in the balls and got fired. And she says, but it's okay because I'd rather be right than be rich. And I'm a great American bitch, which so sad, still true today. And then they want Lucy to participate, but Lucy, and I feel like this falls very in line with her characterization, but she's kind of along for the ride because she's Alice's best friend and she believes in women's rights, but less radically than the others, right? Maybe. So she's like, oh, I just don't really, you know, like the word bitch. Like, I don't want to participate in this song. But then turns out she may have pushed her professor's car into a ditch because I really want to know if this is historically accurate, because he told her she couldn't be a doctor. It's really funny, but it gives a little bit of characterization because we haven't really met this entourage in depth yet.
Yeah. And that was also one of the complaints, I think, in the off-Broadway version. Okay, we're just getting a lot of events, but we don't really understand who these people are, why we should care about them.
Yeah, because you mentioned how they weren't particularly likable off-Broadway.
Yeah, their only characterization was in the How Can We Do It When It's Never Been Done song. Like, when they first get introduced, they didn't really get more in-depth characterization than that.
And Alice Paul herself, I don't think is that likable of a person, really. Because she's just like ambitious and driven are her main characteristics. So I feel like she really depends on her friends to make her likable as a character. Mm-hmm. This song just kind of showing how the group jives together really helps the entire group and also Alice.
Yeah, and it is also just nice to see, like, you don't have to be an Alice Paul to participate in a movement like this, you know, where you don't have to be like always at the forefront and being the one that's like absolutely obsessed with it. You can still like help out and participate in different ways.
I feel like that theme stands throughout the show. Obviously, you know, kind of predictably at the end of the show with like, you can do more today, which wonderful. But yeah, like you could be a Lucy or a Doris. They are people who want to chill, want to get married, want to have families, don't want to be a career suffragist forever.
Yeah.
But they're still so historically important. And I feel like that's reinforced throughout the show.
Yeah.
I'm a great American beach. I refuse to wear corsets and lace. I earn my own wages and burst into rages when men say no, you're the place. My boss tried to fondle me under my skirt, and I kicked him like this in the crotch where it hurt. I got fired, but hey, I'd rather be right than rich, 'cause I'm a great American bitch.
She's a great American bitch. She's a great American bitch.
Yeah, we get like a little bit of an interlude just to see Woodrow Wilson, and we also get introduced to his assistant, aide, something, Dudley Malone.
Is it not his chief of staff? It's just
unclear. I should look that up. Anyway, he works closely with another guy whose name is Dudley. And it's just sort of a time to showcase like his point of view, his reaction to the march. He also has a very traditional point of view. He's like, ladies should be, you know, back at home. They should be protected. We should care for them. And we shouldn't basically like burden them by allowing them to vote. Dudley's like, yeah, yeah, totally. You're absolutely right.
Is he? I didn't think he was like that. It seemed like in the scene, he's like new to this position. Mm-hmm. And he's just like, hey, these suffragists are here to see you. And Woodrow Wilson is just like, oh, when the world is changing and everything's in flux and things are terrible, what always stays the same is our ladies back at home, ready with dinner. And I feel like Dudley is neither agreeing nor disagreeing, because obviously this is a new job for him. But he's just kind of like, cool, cool. Yeah. So should I tell them to come in? Which, like, I feel like is what his entire stance in this song is. He's like, yeah, man, they're waiting at the door. Totally hear what you're saying. Should I invite them in?
Yeah, I guess maybe I just saw that as more like active agreement rather than just like not saying anything. But I could see what you're saying. That was like the baseline view of the time, right? Like probably what most men believed. So I just like assumed he was like, yeah, totally.
Also, looking him up, I don't think he was chief of staff. So we're all good. He is apparently one of the most prominent liberal attorneys of the 1920s. And he was also a politician, an activist, and an actor. So people really had time for multiple careers back then. We don't have that anymore.
I'm going to skip ahead and then we can come back. But just because we're talking about Dudley, he later like ends up bumping into Doris at a bar.
Well, they commandeer him at a bar. The reason why it happens is because Woodrow Wilson, like I said, ghosts Alice Paul and her friends. His re-election is like impending. So they're like, we need to take drastic measures. So Rusa drags Doris to basically stalk Dudley at a bar.
It's really cute to see Doris during this song, which is If We Were Married, because at first she's really shy. You can tell she kind of like doesn't really have much experience talking to men, but you really see her believing in the suffragist movement and in women's rights and everything, because she basically starts going off on this rant about how if she were to get married, and she uses Dudley as a hypothetical, it's like, if we were married, I wouldn't have any rights. You'd be able to do whatever you want. I would be essentially dead in the eyes of the law because you would control everything I do and everything, whatever. And this is why I'm not going to get married until we at least have the right to vote, because then we can at least speak for ourselves. And Dudley is like actually very charmed by this because he didn't know any of that. And he's like, oh my God, no wonder you guys really want suffrage. I'm going to listen to you now, because This is stuff that I feel like I should have known.
Dudley is like, if we were married, I'd be so good to you and we would go on sunset walks. And Doris is like, if we were married, I would be legally dead and not have any rights or possessions. And that is, yeah, it's a duet. If you don't see this show, it is essentially the songified version of Florence Pugh's Amy March speech in Little Women. The one where she's like, even if I had my own money, which I don't, it would belong to my husband. The minute that we were married and if we had children, they would belong to him. Not me, not us, him. That is this song.
Yeah. Like,
pretty much word for word, the same thing.
I think we should circle back to Worth It quickly, at least, because while they're talking about relationships and stuff, Alice Paul is like, oh yeah, like, you know, I've just decided to dedicate my whole being to this. Is it worth it? Is it worth it? Honestly, I don't know if this needed to be a separate song, but it does still show us a little more about like just how dedicated she is to this movement.
She also has an admirer.
She does.
An educated, potentially liberal admirer who can recite the Magna Carta word for word. And she has this number and she literally like rips it up dramatically because she's like, no, I'm dedicating my life to the movement and I have absolutely no time for anything else, period. And then convention part one, this girl, and convention part two are basically what I was saying earlier, where Woodrow Wilson's up for re-election, and at this point, he has made the mistake of ghosting Alice Paul so hard that she decides to openly campaign against him, even though that's the opposite of what NASA wants to do, because they want to elect the president who has essentially promised them not to enter World War One.
Yeah, so at the convention, Alice Paul gets a chance to speak, and, you know, right after Carrie has spoken about how they're willing to support Wilson, Alice Paul's immediately like, vote Wilson out, fuck him.
She made banners for this. Like, four banners.
She did. And then we sort of, like, do one of those, like, frozen in time soliloquy songs from Carrie, where she is just like, the audacity of this girl, how dare she? Because Alice was also saying like, oh, this old guard like won't move fast enough, like we have to be the ones to really push for social change. And Carrie's like kind of offended at this because she's like, bitch, I've been doing this longer than you've been alive, like don't tell me about what it's like to push for social change. And this is sort of the first part of when she realizes that she has now become the like stuffy old guard compared to the new young liberals and stuff. But she's still mostly just angry.
I would say like this is Carrie Cat / Jen Colella's big number.
Yeah.
It is a really, really good number. It doesn't really go in the direction that I thought it would, because it's called This Girl and she starts with like, oh my God, like this girl in terms of Alice Paul, like who the fuck does she think she is? And then she starts singing This Girl as relating to herself. And I feel like that's where the song really picks up. And that's where I like this song the most, because she essentially recounts her whole life, which is super interesting, because she's like, I remember when I was the radical up and comer and I like ran in here with a million ideas and I was shot down. I just accepted it and, you know, worked peacefully alongside the old people, and I married a guy for a good reputation and then he died when I was basically in college. It's kind of heartbreaking, like in a way where, you know how like immigrants sometimes learn their mother's stories, and it's like, oh fuck, that was abusive as fuck. Yeah. How did you survive all that? Why is my dad not in jail? Like that kind of thing. I feel like it's a little bit like that, where it's like, it's probably a very normal story for her time, but it's just kind of sad because she's like, these are all of the things that I basically had to do against my wanting in order to secure my current position, and that's why I don't want it to be jeopardized by this teenager.
Yeah, because she has also worked for however many years just to be able to get to where she is. And it's also just cool because up until now we've kind of seen Carrie as this like fairly demure person, like, you know, with the let mother vote, she's very much, you know, and you really get to see like the revolutionary in her that she's sort of had to keep like tamped down just so that she can be palatable to the people that she's trying to appease. It's Jen Colella, you know that she's going to pull something out. But like, she's not just going to stay demure forever. But it is true. Just like how that comes out is a really interesting way to just sort of show what kind of person she was.
Yeah, the more I think about it and listen to it, the more I really, really like it. And again, I just think it does this good job of like, even though she is maybe a little more dated in her thinking, like I really didn't see her as a villain for most of this show because you definitely see her point of view.
I can't believe I am now viewed as the old guard and she as the beacon of change. Me, the old fogey. How strange. Raised by a penniless drunk who refused to send her to school. Not this girl who paid her own way through college, proving she's nobody's fool. Who worked as the first woman superintendent, harassed by her boss, but managed to thrive. Who married a man for a good reputation, then found herself widowed at age 25.
The convention goes on. They decide to cut off Alice Paul's group from NASA. And then this was kind of random, honestly, but they just got this like rich white lady, Alva Belmont. She's like, I like you. I'm going to give you a fuck ton of money and a new office.
She married a Vanderbilt.
Is that how she's so rich?
I'm pretty sure she married a Vanderbilt. And then she, let's see, did she outlive or divorce him? She outlived a Vanderbilt. She married and outlived a Vanderbilt. After she outlived a Vanderbilt, she also outlived a banker named Oliver Belmont.
Wow. Good for her.
Yeah. Yeah. She is the mother of three Vanderbilts.
They become the... Is it the National Women's Party? Is that the one?
Yeah.
That's how they get off the ground, I guess. Alice and Inez and stuff, they go on basically like a national states. Mostly Inez because she's the figurehead.
Specifically campaign against Wilson.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's the campaign song. Show Them Who You Are. Not the most important song, but this is Alice singing to Inez because Inez wants to quit.
Oh, yeah.
She's very sick. We didn't know that. She's kind of unclear about how sick she is because she's literally just like, I'm tired, baby forever. So I'm going to take a break. And Alice is like, no, don't do that. And she's like, Alice, you cannot convince me. And Alice is like, okay, but do you really, you're trying to have to know that you were a quitter? And she has this like whole inspirational song / debate for Inez. She's like, we need to go out there and show them who we are so that when you have kids one day, you can like proudly tell them that you didn't quit and you were part of this movement. And Inez is like, God damn it, you've convinced me.
Yeah.
So then she sings the campaign, and the actress for it,
Hannah Cruz,
she does a really good job in this song because, again, we don't actually know how sick she is at all. In Show Them Who You Are, I believe all she says is just like, she's tired, she's exhausted, she needs a break, she's trying to have a baby.
Yeah.
Pain. She looks like, so the way that the song is structured is like, she stage sings like go out and vote, like have your say because they're trying to vote Wilson out. And every time she does that, a different state flag drops. So you know that like she's done her speech in that state and then she's done her speech in the next state. And she does the state after state after state. She's singing the same thing every time, like go out and vote. And it's like very belty, but she looks like insane. Like she is burning the candle at both ends. Really tell. And she looks more and more like unhinged and a little bit delirious with like every single stains that for.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't know she was going to, spoiler alert, drop dead. But I think you can really like kind of infer it from how she acts out this song.
And like, and then they find out that Woodrow Wilson was reelected. And this is before I think they got news that Inez died. And then Alice just like sort of goes down a little bit of a guilty spiral because she's like, oh, I was the one that told her to get out there. But then she decides to use that as...
I kind of blame her too.
But then she also immediately goes into like, okay, here are the arrangements we're going to make. Here's the obituary. Like, and she just immediately throws herself into work again. And she's like, Inez died for this. Like, we can't stop now. Like, we have to use this as more momentum even, like, for press and stuff. Her and the whole company sing the Act One closer, which is just how long. And it's kind of like... how much longer do we have to wait? People are literally dying in support of this cause.
At the end of this song, people who attend Inez's memorial are like, girl, what are we going to do? And she's like, okay, meet me at the White House gates. And then we go into intermission so that we can start Act Two with the younger at the gates. But for both this song and I think the next, we had a shared issue, which is it seems like Jen Colella joins the ensemble, which... confused me a lot. I was like, is she Carrie? Is she Carrie attending this memorial? Because even though they're fighting, it's a polite thing to do. Or yeah. Is she on the ensemble? Because then she starts dancing in the back.
Right. I mean, I guess like they probably just wanted as many people on stage as possible. But also at that point, like she is so recognizable that it's kind of just like, just leave her out.
Give her a wig. I would not recognize her with long hair. I don't think. Thought she had long blonde hair in Chaplin.
What? Hold on.
Yeah.
You need to look this up.
Damn, she... See, if they put her in that wig, I would be certain that's not Carrie. You know, that's all they needed.
How long?
Told me discouragement only excited her.
So brilliant a speaker, we can't afford to lose.
She belongs to life,
to the struggling actuality of the earth.
I used to wish
I could be in her shoes.
At the Public, the younger at the gates was the Act One closer, which I feel like, based on the amount of merch for this song, was overhyped for me.
Act One ends a little bit on a down note. We're just like, we're kind of depressed that it's taking this long. But originally with the younger at the gates as the Act One closer, it's kind of like, all right, here's what we're doing. Act One feels a little more wrapped up. I think by having how long close Act One, they have the excuse to put Inez's picture up during intermission, which is really cool. It's like a picture of her on horseback leading the march.
Although the song after the younger at the gates, Respectfully Yours, Dudley Malone, would be such a classic Act Two opener. I know that's probably not what this show cares about. The other thing is, and I know this is probably also not what this show cares about, but they would have sold a lot more merch if they had the younger at the gates in Act One, I think. It is on an insane amount of their merch. And intermission is when I look at merch and I was like, I don't know what the fuck this is.
That's fair. Yeah.
So Act Two. The younger at the gates. This is what, like a silent protest?
It's just like a, we're just going to stand by the gates to make it known that we are unhappy.
Like, it seems really bleak, to be honest, but then they are like, then people join us. And I'm like, oh, good. But then I feel like it gets bleak again. Like, it's very unclear to me if it's bleak or if it's popping.
Mm-hmm. Well, because at some point, World War I is declared. It's illegal to not be a patriot. It's illegal to basically protest the government. And they're like, you know what? We're going to keep doing this. So then they get arrested. Yeah. Also, quickly, Respectfully Yours, Dudley Malone, which you mentioned, is Dudley resigning because he's like, listen, I've heard you promise that you will, you know, push for the suffrage movement. I haven't seen you do anything about it. And it makes women legally dead. So I think this is something that I now strongly believe in. And he resigns because he is a great ally.
I think this is now something I strongly believe in.
But yeah, so they get thrown into jail. Alice Paul decides to go on a hunger strike, and she convinces all her friends to do it too. Rusa is pretty upset by this because she's like, you already killed Inez by pushing her so hard, like now you're gonna kill us too. Dudley comes through because he pretends that him and Doris are married, and he's like, listen, that's my wife in there. Like, I don't even know, like,
he's probably recognizable as a politician, you know?
Yeah, like, but the prison warden is just like, all right, here you go. She's your problem now. And I'm like, it's that easy?
Does not give a fuck.
And he does like flash a little badge that he dropped in our performance, maybe on purpose, maybe not, unclear.
Yeah, he is like, look, I have this official badge and this official letter from the president. And the letter's clearly a fake. He's like hiding it.
Yeah, so then Doris is able to make it out and she starts spreading letters and stuff to the press so that the public knows what they're going through. And meanwhile, Alice Paul still refuses to eat. They start trying to force feed them. At some point, they realize that she's the leader. So they're like, we should put her in isolation so she can't really keep influencing the other ones. And also because we just kind of need to like break her spirit.
And then Woodrow Wilson gets this whole doctor's report that are like, the ladies are very happy and healthy. But then, like, meanwhile, on another section of the stage, you see them, like, literally suffering and being force-fed like animals. And it's a very depressing part of the show. There's no men in the cast.
Right.
Both Dudley and Woodrow Wilson are played by women. So there's also no guards that are like actually pushing them around, but then they make all these jerky movements.
I was gonna say that, yeah. I was actually impressed at how well you could sort of see what the like non-existent guards were doing to them just based on the movement. So when she's in isolation, they're basically like, oh, well, why would someone who hasn't eaten for like, I don't know, 2 weeks at this point still deny food? She must be insane. So that's like sort of the thing that they're going to try to push. And then she also might be hallucinating now because she hasn't eaten in 2 weeks. So she sees the ghost of Inez appear before her. And Inez is basically like, you're being a dumb bitch. Like, I didn't die for you to starve yourself. So get it together. She convinces Alice that she should start eating again so that she can get stronger, get released, and like actually go back to campaigning. So Alice does that. I don't really like her song that she sings, which is just called Insane. She does like convince the doctor through that song to not declare her insane, but I don't know. I didn't think it was that compelling of a song. And I also thought it went on for too long and it just wasn't that interesting to me.
Dark horse doctor ally who goes to Wilson and is like, I don't think she's crazy. I think she's just driven. So what is fire and tea? Because is that when they light them on fire?
Yeah. So
okay.
they get released and they immediately start protesting again.
Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah. She does not rest.
Super funny. They set like an effigy of Woodrow Wilson on fire. Wilson is like not happy about this because he's already having enough trouble with the war. He's like, I don't need these girls here. And Carrie Cat is like, hey, I've been wanting to have tea with you for a few months now. Would you like to talk to me instead of these little girls outside setting fire to you? So he's like, oh, all of a sudden, Carrie Cat seems like the reasonable person to talk to. And she does her whole thing where she's just like, these annoying little girls will go away once you like say that you will support the 19th Amendment. And all you have to do is say you support it. Because it's actually Congress that has to pass it. So that's up to them. That's what Fire and Tea is. I did like this song, just the juxtaposition of Carrie and Alice's like point of views. And this was kind of what I was talking about in the beginning as well, with like you kind of needed both to really push Wilson to publicly declare that he supported a 19th Amendment to allow women to vote.
Woodrow Wilson shakes Carrie Cat's hand as like his face is being lit on fire outside of the White House. Is the Let Mother Vote reprise when now they join the war? Is this Let Mother Serve?
Probably.
So now, like, she officially has Woodrow Wilson's backing, which is really great. So they can start campaigning at each state for the 19th Amendment to get approved. But at some point, the U.S. joins World War I. And Carrie Cat sings a reprise of Let Mother Vote, which is called Let Mother Serve. And she's basically like, let mother serve. Let us sew your fucking uniforms and do whatever we need to win this war, which her friends at NASA and potentially her lesbian lover are not that happy about, because they're like, you are a pushover. We don't want this war. We don't support it. It's a little bit of a big deal because she does kind of alienate her friends at NASA. But then it's okay. They're on the road for the 19th Amendment. And she and I.
Yeah. Both Carrie and Alice are obviously invested in this because they both want the 19th Amendment to happen. It's like the last stop. It's in Tennessee or something. Literally all comes down to whether Tennessee agrees to ratify or not. And
they're like one vote off too.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's just for drama, but.
Yeah. Very high stakes. She and I. It's one of those fun songs where there's just two women sort of sniping at each other passive aggressively.
Well, I think this is where Carrie actually respects Alice, because you know how she got like 20% of the way there at this girl, but then mm-hmm. she kind of just deviated. I feel like for She and I, she actually got there. They meet up in a hotel hallway or whatever, because they're both, you know, traveling from state to state and everything. She just like dry cleaned her dress that she is planning on wearing if they get the vote. And Alice is carrying like a flag that she's sewing on stars for like every state that they convince. Mm-hmm. It, like, it shows how similar they are. Like, they're both like cautiously excited and planning for what's about to happen. And that's when Carrie Cat is like, oh my gosh, like she and I are actually really, really similar. And I used to be this person and I wish her the best.
Yeah, they, like you said, make it super dramatic when we get down to the vote. It's literally down to this, like, one last guy. Literally, as he's about to cast his vote, this, like, messenger runs up. He's like, I have a telegram from your mother. And he's like, okay. And now that I'm saying it, I really do see your point about this would have been a great moment for another Let Mother Vote reprise. But yes! That was not what this is.
Yes, I know.
But basically, she's like, oh, like... I wanted to do all these things with my life, but I couldn't because my like husband died and then I had to raise you. And I thought that this was just going to be my life forever. But now I see all these young women petitioning to be able to vote. And I just wish them the best. And I really hope that I've raised you well enough. And because that was the only thing that I could do to contribute to the cause was raise you. So please do me proud. And basically guilt trips him into voting yes for the amendment.
Yeah. I feel like it was also like another archetype because she specifically mentions how her husband died in the war. She's just like, I wish I could have had a say with my vote, because if I did, I would have like voted against the war, which isn't something you can do, actually. But she's just like, yeah, I wish I had a say because your father wouldn't have died. And she's like very sad she lost her husband. And I think that probably represents like a lot of suffragists and women in general of her time. I don't think she is passive aggressive about it, but it's just still really funny because she's just like, you know, I wanted to march with these women, but I was stuck raising you. So... And Harry listens. But yeah, I've been saying since we watched this, I don't know because, okay, so Let Mother Vote is kind of a comedy song. Like, it's not comedy, but obviously, like, it opens the show.
It's a little
tongue-in-cheek. It's not that heavy. Yeah, exactly. Because she's just like, let mother vote. We'll vote exactly like the men. Yay. Mm-hmm. It elicits some type of feeling that it's like these women have to kind of beg their sons for rights. And I just feel like she could have done a power ballad of like, let mother vote, I raised you, which is specifically in the main Let Mother Vote song that starts the show where she's like, I raised you, I bathed you.
Yeah.
It would have been perfect. But anyways, it passes. Yay.
Yay. They give this a whole song title, but it's still a refrain that we've heard before, which is just the whole, I want my daughter to know, I want my sister to know I was here, I want my great granddaughter to know, that whole thing. Because it is just really them letting the moment sink in.
Mary Church Terrell is there with NASA. So she calls Ida B. Wells And she's like, all these white bitches were crying their faces off. It's a sweet moment on the phone because obviously it's like, this is an amazing thing that has just happened, but they can't actually vote because they're black. So they have this moment on the phone that's like, oh my God, like I'm so happy. I can't even convey it. Like I can't even speak. Mm-hmm. But also it doesn't even do shit for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Then we go back to the white woman and Dudley, who has been, you know, very supportive this whole time of Doris, is like, okay, so now that women are allowed to vote, remember when you said that you wouldn't get married until women could vote? And she's just like, yes. It's really cute. They get married and she quits the suffrage movement. Well, I guess there's no suffrage movement. She quits the National Women's Party like almost immediately after. But she is like, I'm writing a book.
Yeah. I mean, this is what we were saying earlier about how it's like you can be like a quote unquote regular and even like traditional woman and still care about your rights, because she's like, hey, I don't want to do this full time anymore because I want to get married and I want to have a separate career. Rosa quits as well to become a Broadway actress,
which is historically accurate.
I know. I'm so glad they said that because I was so confused. And then we have Lucy's song, which is her quitting, and she gets a whole song to quit because she is Alice's best friend since college. I mean, this is really like the I'm a regular woman part, because she's just kind of like, you know, like obviously I am a fairly progressive woman for my time because I went to college and I cared about my career and I cared about my education and I fucked up that one professor's car, but I wasn't like dedicated as fuck to this movement until I met you. And just like how insanely passionate you were about all of this really moved me. And I just wanted to be along here for the ride. You're the genius. And I just wanted to witness it, basically, like that kind of thing. And she's like, I'll always be your friend, but I am not fucking staying with you. I swear to God, do not try to convince me. She basically does what Inez does, but successfully. She's like, bye bye. And Alice does try to convince her. And she's like, no, no, I worry you didn't hear me. What I said was, I am leaving.
It's kind of fair that they're just like, listen, we did this, but we can't just have this continuing to be our full-time job. But I was also like kind of feeling bad for Alice because she was just like already onto the next thing. She was like, okay, equal rights amendment. I'm sure it didn't necessarily happen this way in real life, but just the way that it's portrayed in the show, it feels like all her friends just instantly abandoned her at the same time. So it was just like, I thought I had four friends and now I have zero that are working with me, you know. Meanwhile, Alice like gets to work and they really age her pretty successfully, I think, with a bit of costuming and posturing and stuff.
At first I was like, is she tired? And I was like, oh no, she's old. Also, somewhere in between, Carrie Cat runs away to Europe with her lesbian lover. Like for work, she's like, you know, like a feminist figurehead in Europe.
Good for her, honestly. We see Alice Paul is still doing what she does best. She doesn't stop to have a family or get married or anything. She is just continuing to work, mostly on the Equal Rights Amendment. And then we get that scene where another girl comes in to like, who's interested in the National Women's Party. She doesn't think Alice Paul's doing enough. And Alice has a little bit of that like, wait, this girl is me. And then the final song is just Keep Marching, which is also like that inspirational, but maybe a little bit generic.
So it did speak to me, to be honest. And I do agree it is still very generic inspirational. But I feel like I needed to hear it. And I feel like a lot of people our age maybe need to hear it, because they say this is going to take really long and the gains aren't going to seem that worth it and the losses are going to be a lot and you're going to want to quit, but you still got to work at it step by step because the people who came before you did, and that's why you have the rights you do today. Like, I feel like even though like that sounds very generic, it was important to say because we're the whole instant gratification generation. I definitely don't know how to protest for a decade and not eat for 2 weeks. Like, you know, like we're very like, We're right. I know we're right. Come on, give it to us. Like, I feel like that's us.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like that's also why in the beginning, when it was just like they suddenly had 200,000 people, I wanted to know more about that. Because if the story they were trying to present was like, anyone could do this, I'm like, well, tell me how, you know? So that I was like, give me the steps, like, tell me how to do this.
Maybe it's because they didn't get Doris on the team until the almost the end of that part.
Yeah, so no one was paying attention.
Yeah, like she didn't start documenting until like the last 20% because she was the last person to join the crew.
Could be possible.
Games will feel small and the loss is too large. Keep marching, keep marching. You'll rarely agree with whoever's in charge. Keep marching, keep marching. Because your ancestors are all the proof you need that progress is possible, not guaranteed. It will only be made if we keep marching, keep marching on.
I think if we're talking Tony nominations and possible wins, right now, this is probably what I would say is the most front runner.
Right.
I mean, I've been hearing a lot of great things about Outsiders, even though the reviews are a little mixed. So that's kind of my main thing that I'm unsure about. And there's still a faction of people who think Illinois might just take Best Musical, which I would still truly be shocked by at this point. But I guess we'll find out next week. When I see it.
We don't have reviews on this show yet, right?
Suffs is opening today.
Damn. Okay, so we'll know very soon.
Yeah.
I hope they're fairly positive. I know it's not a perfect show, but I want it to do well. I definitely would be expecting a score and book nomination.
Yeah.
You mentioned Shayna's probably going to get a nomination because, you know, she wrote the show.
Yeah.
Who else in the cast? Anyone?
Oh, I mean, there's so many women.
The best chance from this show is probably going to be Inez, right? I feel like that Inez would come before Doris and...
Well, Inez or Carrie.
Oh, oh my God, I forgot about her. Yeah, of course. Oh my gosh. That's such a good point because Jen Colella does do a lot in this show.
Yeah. I mean, Nikki M. James got nominated for a couple of the smaller awards off-Broadway, so also an option, as Ida B. Wells. So got a few options for featured. By the time this comes out, reviews will be out, so we'll see how right we were, I guess. The Water for Elephants ones were truly a shock. So
yeah.
I think just about everyone I know was baffled at the critics' pick, to be fair, so... I don't know what Jesse Green was on. Maybe he just really likes circus. Maybe he wanted to run off and join the circus when he was a child.
When are we going to get some new fucking New York Times reviewers? I really thought we'd be past this by now.
Right, because they never actually replaced Ben Brantley. They were just like, Jesse can do everything now. And I was like, can he though? So we're slowly working our way through. I think we're going to probably do a few double episodes coming up after this. So keep an eye on that, and you can subscribe to our podcast feed on whatever podcast platform you prefer. You can also follow us on Instagram and Twitter at BottomlessBway or email us at bottomlessbway@gmail.com, and we'll see you for our next episode.